everyone, and welcome to episode 706 of Long Box Heroes, the Lamborghini of comic book podcasts. I'm Todd, along with Joe. How we doing today, Joe?
I finally sprung and got new headphones for myself.
Ooh, a big purchase. A recent acquisition, if you will.
Not to say that I needed new headphones, per se, but the law of transitive properties were I had over-the-ear headphones that I would wear when I would do the lawn. I had to do lawn for the first time this week. And those broke. So the ones that I used for the show became the ones that I would use for the lawn. And I'm like, oh, I should get new headphones. I've been looking at them for a while. The ones that I have here for the show are very old, let's say. No spoilers.
Cat chewed.
No, not cat chewed, but the wire was super tangled on them, right?
Gotcha.
And I did everything that I could to try to untangle the wire, and I'm just like, eh, they'll be my lawn mowing headphones. I'll splurge. I didn't go to Five Below to get them. I actually, you know, purchased name brand good ones. They fit nicely over my ear. They're adjustable over my giant melon head. So it was a purchase. I'm very happy. A rare purchase to splurge for myself. You know,
right.
This is not weekly purchases. So
right. Oh, this is recent acquisitions. Different bit completely. But were they Dr. Dre Beats? I bet that's what they were.
No. Hang on. There. They are Panasonic brand.
Ooh. What were some of the other brands that you can get? Magnavox.
Magnet Box, Sorny,
yeah.
Five Below is a big one. You know, that's typically how you could tell if you're a good podcaster, if you have like multiple sets of headphones.
Your headphones have like a solid plastic casing to prevent fall apart, Joe.
That's right.
Glad to hear it.
I was rolling up the pennies all weekend for them.
Yep.
So enough about this nonsense. What do we got for the show this week, Todd?
Right. In news, Donald Hot Claws Duck? Question mark. More Red Band comics. A sequel to a hit from DC. New imprints. It seems like we're getting new prints every day, and I have thoughts on this, Joe. An update on Spawn's first appearance. Hey, everybody, Dr. Herbert West has entered the chat.
Oh, my goodness.
Right. And sadly, yet another creator has passed away. It seems like it's happening way too often. Also, the return of the Rob Watch. Unlike his ego, we have a small Rob Watch this week.
So,
The latest edition of My Walk Down Lois Lane by our good friend Becky, where it's ships passing in the dark night. Anyway, what we read last week, which was both Action Comics 1064 and Green Lantern number 10, what we're looking forward to this week, Todd and Joe have issues where we reread Gail Simone's Secret Six in its entirety, where we are now on a slight detour in Birds of Prey with number 106, and I don't believe we have any TV or movie talk at the end. Hopefully soon, Joe. That's coming round.
You know what? I might have some TV talk.
Ooh, I hope Heels?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's been canceled.
No, oh, it's going to come back. Everything comes back, John.
Yeah. I do like when you do the opening of the show now, and it seems like it's been forever since you've done the opening of the show.
2 weeks at least.
You try to spice it up and throw some jokes in there, you and the writers.
Yep.
Where when I do the opening, I'm just like, yeah, here's the list of things you're talking about.
Listen, it's the style that I bring to the show, Joe. People expect it now. I don't want to let them down, you know?
Right. So starting from our news here, of course, I think by saying comic book legend would be doing her a disservice, and that is Trina Robbins passed away this past weekend.
Yes.
At the age of 85, and, you know, she had her hands in all facets of comics from early independent comics from the late 60s, early 70s, to working on all ages books at Marvel, amongst many other things. But she had a style unto her own. And then when you look at her history to see the stuff that she did, outside of comics. Like, you could argue and say that outside of her designing the Vampirella costume,
right,
everything else that she did outside of comics is more important than the stuff that she did in comics, which is super important.
Right. I don't know how, and I just want to say this on the Vampirella costume. I don't know how many times I've seen, like, you know, young women or women come into the comic shop and see Vampirella for the first time and just immediately go, like, definitely a man designed that costume. And I'm like, not so fast, my friend.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But yeah, that's an iconic costume. But yeah, she's done a lot of other stuff too, like you said.
Right. And, you know, obviously she wasn't definitively tied to any one publisher or anything else like that. But hopefully, you know, as we've been seeing a lot lately, you had mentioned some of the, you know, creators that, you know, you and I have been reading comics now 30 plus years. You know, comics have been quote unquote mainstream now for 60 some years. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the folks that were kicking around in those early days of comics, you know, they're getting in their 80s and 90s. You know, we're going to sadly see a lot more folks just, you know, sadly due to old age, you know, come up in passing and discussed on this show, right?
Yeah. You know who I'm sad we missed too was Ramona Freyden. When mm-hmm. you were gone away, we had the insert and she passed away, and we missed her because it was like 2 weeks later. But yeah, it just seems like you said, we are getting older, and you know, the hits just keep on coming, so I'm getting sad, Joe.
Mm-hmm. Well, moving on to maybe more good news, everyone. Mm-hmm. Alongside Marvel doing more stuff with the Disney properties, more interesting and different stuff with the Disney properties. We had talked a couple weeks ago that Marvel is doing an Uncle Scrooge one-shot that's going to be written by Jason Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing a What If comic of What If Donald Duck Became Wolverine.
Interesting.
The writing team on it, I'm not familiar with, in Luca Barbieri and Glada Persinotto.
Nailed it.
But this is just ridiculous enough of a premise to work.
They seem to have the same temperament, Wolverine and Donald Duck, so I think it'll work.
Mm-hmm. Donald is my favorite Disney character. If I had to pick one,
I'm a Pluto man. So
mm-hmm.
I always felt bad for the dog that wasn't like human in the human animal world. I always felt bad for him, but so.
But I don't know. If this is something that strikes your fancy, go buy it, because then maybe Marvel will do more of these things. And don't get tricked like other people have. And I think you and I are a little bit too in tune with variant covers and stuff. Over the last couple months,
right,
Marvel has been doing these unrelated Disney variant covers,
mm-hmm,
where it'll be an issue of Amazing Spider-Man, let's just say, and here's a variant cover of a bunch of assorted Disney characters as the Defenders. Right?
Right.
So if you're just cursory looking at like the shelves and you're like, oh, that looks like a Defenders book. I like Disney. I guess that's the variant cover this month. And they don't do a great job of putting the title of the comic forefront.
No, they don't on the variants. With those
Disney variants. So I don't know, maybe don't buy this to punish Marvel to not put Disney stuff on the covers of their books. I don't know. You do you. We're here to inform you, the listeners of this show, of what's going to be going on in the world of comics in the coming months, right?
That's right. I will say I'm shocked this hasn't happened sooner, mm-hmm, when Marvel acquired and Disney acquired so many properties. I'm still shocked Marvel and Disney, Marvel and Star Wars haven't crossed over yet somehow. How did that not happen, you know? Saving that for a lean year, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's one of those things where you have it in your back pocket, as you mentioned, in a lean year when like the sales really start to dip.
Mm-hmm.
That's that like pull lever if sort of thing.
Right. In case of emergency, smash Marvel and Star Wars.
Yeah. Now, another thing that Marvel is doing coming out this summer, spinning out of the not even out yet Blood Hunt event. which was going to have variants with insides instead of variant covers, which there will certainly be variant covers, but they were going to have alternate insides of the comics with extra pages that were going to be more ghastly and grisly than your average Marvel comic book.
Right.
And they were going to be polybagged, quote-unquote, red band versions of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Well, spinning out of Bloodhunt, Marvel announced that they are going to be doing their first red band book, ongoing miniseries. I'm not really sure what it is, but it's going to be Werewolf by Night by the creative team Jason Liu and Sergio Davila. And the reason I bring this up is, of course, we mentioned before the previous red band variant, but the fact that they're going full red band, no other choice on this, I guess this takes the place of whatever the Max line used to be. And right. Some of those books were pretty ghastly and grisly, and those weren't in poly bags.
What? When Punisher punched a polar bear and then that polar bear took somebody's head off? That was ghastly?
Well, that was Marvel Knights, and that was a little bit more played for fun and kicks, you know?
Gotcha.
But when Punisher became Punisher Max and the other Max books and, like, technically the first Jessica Jones book, Alias, was Max, but that was more, I would assume, for language and sexual situations.
Yeah, yeah.
But this being, like, a full-on gore comic...
Mm-hmm.
Are we reverting back to the 50s? I think a couple of weeks ago we did the story where was it Dynamite or was it Titan or somebody like that was bringing back like the Tales from the Crypt comics with Jason Aaron involved with those as well.
Right, right. I forget. Yeah, so company, yeah.
Yeah, it's like grisly, ghastly horror books on the return.
I think so. I mean, did they... They probably never go out of style, but they'll be like they'll peak again for a little while. You know what I mean? Like, because I wouldn't know it unless Kyle Starks did one of the issues. Is that there's a Creepshow comic? You know what I mean? Like, so I was like, oh yeah, they're still out there. They're just not in my purview. You know?
Yeah, and I'm seeing this at like Titan or Dynamite or Image or whatever it is. But to see Marvel, you know, the Disney company, right?
Yeah, well, once they brought Logan over to Disney Plus, you know?
I guess.
That things change, you know? But as you were saying with all the, like, Marvel Knight and the, what is the other one, Max and all that, I will say, when it comes to, like, all these imprints, I get very, very confused, Joe.
You mean, like, the past ones?
And future ones and possible ones and ones that never happened. There's just too many imprints for my tastes.
Well, batten down the hatches, Todd, because we got more coming. Dynamite is going to be doing an imprint like we had talked last week where they were doing a Kickstarter or backed by or something for the Terminator book. They're going to be doing a new creator imprint called Dynamite Originals, where they're going to be letting some of their regular creative teams, writers and artists, do their own creator-owned stuff at their, you know, under their namesake, right?
Right.
I think the first couple that got announced is there's a book called Redefining Shadows by a creative team I'm not aware of, Undercover by Tim Seeley, who did Hack Slash and Nightwing way, way back in the day. And then another one called The Ballad of Blind Love by Steve Orlando, who had done a bunch of stuff at DC. Mm-hmm. So this is the first time, like, ever Dynamite is doing creator-owned stuff.
Right. I wonder if it's... Didn't they lose a bunch of, like, licensed properties recently, too?
Go ahead. It's so tough to keep track of who has what licenses, like, as it comes across the news wire, as it were.
Right. Yeah,
I definitely try to mention it, but I feel as though, like, and this is one of those weird things, Dynamite has the Disney properties.
Right.
Like, they do a Gargoyles book, and they do a bunch of the Disney villain books. There was, like, a Cruella de Vil book.
Right, and Darkwing Duck and stuff like that.
Darkwing Duck, right. So it's weird to see Disney properties, you know, not at the Disney-owned company at Marvel. And I wonder how properties and like licensing agreements like that even work. You know, that's way out of my pay grade. That's way out of my mental capacity.
I can't, I wouldn't even be able to keep up. So if they did had full disclosure, you know,
but not to be outdone, DC is doing their own creator own line now, or maybe it's like an ultimate line or it's something.
Yeah.
It's spearheaded by Scott Snyder. All we got is his name and a logo so far. We don't even have a date yet. We're told that we're going to get the official announcement at San Diego this year. But apparently this is something that's been in the line for years and for a variety of reasons is now just getting started. And this is after Scott Snyder was shopping a lot of his stuff around to Image and Dark Horse and Comixology Originals.
Mm-hmm.
So to see whatever he has planned for this, since he's going to be like the linchpin, the kingpin, the capo de tutte capo of this line.
The showrunner, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. What are your thoughts and feelings on this one?
Okay. You ready, Joe? You got a seat? You got a drink?
No, I do I do the podcast standing up.
Okay, good, good. I'm a little worn out on imprints. I've for the first time in 706 episodes, I've taken notes, Joe. So here we go.
Oh boy.
DC, these are the imprints, and I'm just using Wikipedia, the most trusted source in comic book imprints, over the years. All-Star, you know, imprint. That was, you know, founded in 2006, status, inactive. Amalgam Comics, that was one thing, so I won't count that. But DC Black Label, founded in 2018, hey, at least that one's still active. Do you remember DC Focus? Founded in 2004, mid 2005, defunct.
I have no memory of DC Focus.
Right, DC Focus was an alternate imprint from DC. The imprint was an alternative in that titles were about people with superpowers without costumes or fighting crime. That was their bit. DC Inc., founded 2018, says it's still active. We'll take your word for it, because I don't know if they're putting out any books.
That is one of the young adult graphic novel imprints.
Okay. Here's another one. DC Zoom, active 2018. Still going, apparently. So that's another one.
Other young adults graphic novel. I think one is like kids. Mm-hmm. And one is young adults. I'm not sure which is which, but I know I have a vague recollection of those two.
Right. So Earth M is the Milestone universe that was founded. You know, the new one was 2020 and it's still active. There's probably Milestone books, but they're not on our list. Then there's Earth One, which was founded in 2009 and it says is still active. Has there been a new Earth One book in like forever, Joe?
Oh, boy. No.
Right. Now, I'm going to go on to Elseworlds. Elseworlds says it was founded in 1989, which if you listen to Previewing the Past, you would know. Defunct 2010, but they still occasionally do like these Elseworlds stories, but they don't get the Elseworlds label, I guess. So I don't know what the verdict on that label is. Helix, founded in July of 96, defunct in 1998.
I remember Helix was more of a sci-fi slant Vertigo, and that ended up getting folded into Vertigo.
Yes, because Transmetropolitan was a Helix book before it was a Vertigo book. The Impact, obviously, that was 91 to 93 with the Red Circle line. Johnny, do you remember Johnny DC, founded in 2004, defunct 2012. That was all like Billy Batson and the Magic of Shazam and Tiny Titans and stuff like that. So that's another imprint. Minx, founded in 2007, defunct in 2008.
I have no memory of that.
I'm not even going to go over that one. Paradox Press, which, you know, was founded in 1994, coming up in Previewing the Past, defunct 2001. And then that became Piranha Piranha Press was founded in 1987, became Paradox Press in 1994. There was the Tangent comic line that was founded in 1997, inactive as of 2009. It doesn't even say defunct. So there's a ton of these already. Then you hit the granddaddy. I guess they have them in alphabetical order. Vertigo, founded in 1993, defunct in January 2020. Don't get me started. You know what I mean? Wildstorm was 92 to 2010 before it was folded in during New 52. There was the America Best Comics. There was the Zuda Comics, which was web only. So all these, most of them are gone. You know, Vertigo, they killed Vertigo, which was the pedigree of them all to do Black Label. And then, Joe, do you remember the planned one called The Killing Zone in 2018?
No.
The Killing Zone was an upcoming pop-up imprint from DC Comics curated by Jeff Johns, formally announced at San Diego Comic-Con in 2018. It was set to begin publishing in May of 2019. As of yet, not much else is known about The Killing Zone and what books will pop up under their imprint. Now, I'm going into some deep, like, you know, conspiracy theories. I feel all of Jeff Johns' pitches for the killing zone are everything he took over to his comic company. I feel Geiger was the Atomic Knights. I feel Redcoat was a weird Jonah Hex pitch. And I feel the Rook, Exodus Rook, was a Hawkman pitch that he just was like, all right, we're doing them over there. But we had a Jeff Johns imprint that never happened. But now we're getting a Scott Snyder imprint. I'm like, and all of these have happened. I don't care about imprints anymore, Joe. Just give me some books.
I will say the one that always sticks out to me is Earth One. Earth One, the last Earth One book came out 3.5 years ago. It was Green Lantern Earth One Volume 2.
I don't even remember a Green Lantern Earth One.
It was by Gabriel Hardman.
Okay.
Yeah. And it ended on a cliffhanger saying to be continued in book three, which has not come out yet. It's not even been solicited.
It's not going to pop up in Scott Snyder's imprint, hopefully.
No. Okay. And I think to lend some credence to your Killing Zone theory. This is an interview with Jeff Johns from May of 2020.
Right.
Where he says, Killing Zone is a project I'm still very passionate about, taking some pretty obscure DC characters and putting them center stage. I'm waiting for certain artists to become available before I start it. It'll all depend on schedules for everything.
I'm telling you, man.
You also, and again, just as I'm looking this over, if you said it, I apologize. Did you mention Gerard Way's Young Animal imprint?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I must have, that might be in a different section of this, but go ahead.
So I think you're right with Killing Zone. But yeah, I would be willing to, I don't know what the odds makers are saying at this point, Todd, but I'd be willing to put money down that this imprint never happens.
Okay, I think it will happen,
yes,
and then quickly go away like all the other ones. You know what I mean? This might be a, we ticked off Scott Snyder kind of a deal, and we lost Capullo. I'm like big name, like Capullo, bigger name, and you know, in the industry. And I think it's just to do something to make him happy, so he don't leave. You know what I mean? Yep. And this will quickly, the higher ups will screw this up super quick, and this will go the way of the dinosaurs or all the other DC imprints.
Yeah, I feel as though we're gonna get announcements at San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get creators. We're going to get books. We're going to get hard and fast things. We're not going to get any dates
right,
of anything. And then it's going to come to the closer to this third quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter of 2024. And they're going to say, we're going to make a full announcement in 2025. And then it's just going to disappear.
Right. I honestly think we'll get one Scott Snyder project.
Okay.
I think we'll get one. so the paycheck will clear. That's what'll happen. But otherwise, yep. I don't see much coming of this. I could be wrong though. It could be, you know, the new All-Star with the GD character. Who's going to be the new GD character at this imprint? You know,
the GD character.
Do you remember I'm the GD Batman?
Oh, okay.
You know.
Oh boy.
I'm the GD Adam.
Yeah. I'm the GD. Somebody from there's got to be like from the Amalgam. What if he's doing like a new Amalgam universe?
Yeah, but who's he going to mix it with? Because Marvel ain't going to play nice.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe he could do Dynamite with their creator-owned projects.
You know? I'm the GD Access.
Ooh, I think Marvel and DC both have the rights to Access, so they could play, but nobody uses them because they probably have to give the other half of the money away, you know?
Last but not least, one of the hottest off-the-press stories before we record it here. It's officially announced. Typically, we don't get into these. Like, the July solicitations are going to be coming out any day now. And every once in a while, they put press releases out for, like, some of the big heavy hitters ahead of the solicitation so they don't get lost in the solicitations. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that they did, because we are getting from DC Black Label, Todd's favorite imprint at DC.
Right.
We are getting a sequel to Nice House by the Lake with Nice House by the Sea.
Yes.
James Tinian, Alvaro Martinez Bueno, same creative team, same setup, 12 issues with a break in between the issues. You know, the twist on it is that these are not people that know each other. It's all strangers. Don't want to get too much into anything else about what the big twist of the actual first book was. I knew we were going to be getting a sequel sometime in the near future. I'm glad that we're getting the sequel in print at DC. In print number one, DC, whatever, just because Tinian is one of those guys that moved so much of his stuff to Substack.
Yeah.
I was afraid that this was going to get lost in the Substack world, which, again, I got a toe in. I'm subscribed to everyone, so I get their newsletters, so I can keep up on their announcements and whatnots.
Right.
But I'm glad that this is getting, like, a full Big Two publication run.
I'm going to go out on a limb again, and I remember when we were reading this. No, like, this is a good way, with really enjoying this. And I was actually sad when I thought we were getting a definitive ending. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And it was like, oh, there's more to come. And I'm like, oh, okay. But I do feel like whatever's going on with this, that this is a bigger project. I do think we're going to get three or four Nice House by the whatever. There's going to be like a Nice House by the Fjord, you know what I mean? And a Nice House on the Isthmus and stuff like that. But in the end, they're all going to, it's going to be like, you know, I can't think of what the movie was where everybody just, all these people are going to be pitted against each other at some point. Because it's kind of hinted at that mm-hmm. something goes wrong in the first maxi series that they don't really explain. And it looks like they're busted up by somebody. And I think that's what is going to happen, that all these houses are going to be pitted against each other at some point, if that makes any sense. I like this idea.
Ask not for whom the Rob trolls. The Rob trolls for thee. The Rob Watch.
So just a quick hitter for the Rob. The Rob has been relatively behaved this week on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And in his own Facebook group. Not in the Facebook group. I'm no fool, but I have in other places say they really need to ban that one real negative guy in the group.
Yeah. I would say that the nickels ran out. That's what I'll say on the Rob.
But Todd, today, as we record, April 16th, 2024, is the 32nd anniversary of Youngblood number one.
On this day in comic book history, anyway.
That's right. There's no jingle for it.
Right.
But in the 2.5 years of publication of Youngblood, he got 5 issues out.
Oh, wow. Well, at least he still owns all the characters. He could do something someday. Wait, what? I'm sorry. Was that out loud?
Yeah. But, you know, all due credit to Rob. It was the first launch book from Image, still with Malibu. It was the one that kind of led the charge. Without Youngblood, the rest of the Image books don't get to be the successes that they end up being, for better or for worse. It was the first non-Marvel, non-DC comic to sell over a million copies. And a lot of that was built on, based off the strength of the Rob himself, right?
Right. Would I say, Joe, do you think it still would have done well if it was a different one of the other, like if it was Jim Lee or Todd doing the book? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, to me, they're almost like the three. It could have been any of those three, and it would have sold like gangbusters.
So I think the Rob benefited from being first.
Yes, totally, definitely. He got it out there. But I don't think they would have sold less if it was Jim or Todd.
No. I would argue, and this would be a nice way to angle into the other thing that we're going to talk about, is I would argue that if Spawn was first,
yep,
Spawn would have sold more than Youngblood.
Definitely.
Like, a lot more than Youngblood, just because I think the design of Spawn looked cooler than the designs of the Youngblood characters.
Kids love chains.
Right. And I think Jim Lee, because his first book was Wildcats, and I think Wildcats looked close enough to an X-Men type book. Yeah. Not to say that Youngblood didn't look close enough to an X-Men book, because it did look close enough to an X-Men book. I could split you 50-50 of whether or not Jim would have beaten the Rob's numbers, but I could almost guarantee that Todd would have beaten Rob's numbers if he was first.
And I'm with you on this. I'm with you. I think Jim and Rob would have sold the same amount, because it's a team book. But I think what would have given the gusto is Todd started with a single character, which his name, he's front and center, marquee, your star. Do you know what I mean? Where when you're doing a team book, you're looking at the team, you're like, okay, I like the look of this character. Do you know what I mean? You have one thing to focus on with Spawn, if that makes any sense. So,
and I'll say, not a knock on Jim Valentino or Eric Larson, but I think if respectively Shadowhawk or Savage Dragon were that first book, I don't think it would have sold a million copies.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I think if Todd had done a group team also, that it would have, let me put it this way. I think if any of the three had done a solo character, that's the, like, if the Rob did a solo character, or if Jim did a solo character and the other ones didn't, and it would have worked that way, if you get my meaning. I think helps. But I'm done.
I do, not as a knock on X-Men or Fantastic Four, but Spider-Man sells better than them. And not a knock on Justice League or Teen Titans, but Batman sells better than them even to this day.
Exactly.
Yeah. And we're talking about Spawn. Todd, doing his detective work, found yet another alleged first appearance of Spawn. So alleged, not even on SpawnWorld.com, which is the official database of all alleged first appearance of Spawn.
Right.
But this is in a Adventure Comics miniseries called Dawn of the Reanimator. And just like all the other ones, it has a two-page ad in there for the Spawn comic coming from Malibu. And in the eBay listing that Todd sent me, it specifically cites that it predates one of the other alleged ones.
Right, the big one everybody says, Malibu Sun, you know? Well, at least the one you can get graded is Malibu Sun, so.
Right, it specifically cites in the description. It's the whole miniseries. It says predates Malibu Sun 13, right? And he's got it at a reasonable price, I guess, if that's your sort of thing, you know?
And I won't be funny, because it's the full mini. is what you're getting. And what does he have, like $80 on the thing? Now, if you told me, because it's a Reanimator miniseries and it's like small press, and you know how some of those, like we've discussed while we're doing various other shows, where it's like, oh, these weird horror comics sell because they weren't mass produced and people like them for their collection, they're horror collectors. And if you told me it was $80 for that reason, I'd believe you. But I don't like the idea of it $80 for a first appearance of the Spawn, if you get my meaning.
Right. It should be at least over a couple grand.
Yeah. Should be $30,000, Joe.
Right. But again, just to reiterate, you know, we added this new one, of course, to the list. As it stands, I'll say 7 books currently.
Right.
You know, because some of them are like flyers and handaways and like issues of comics reader, like Comics Guide Monthly, which is just like a free flyer that you can pick up.
Right.
But obviously you've got this, the Dawn of the Reanimator. You've got Rust number 1 from Adventure Comics. Rocket Ranger number 4, also from Adventure Comics. Malibu Sun 13. Spawn Direct Market Edition. Spawn Newsstand Edition. And, of course, the one true first appearance of Spawn, Diamond Previews, March 1992.
With 2 variant covers, and the harder to get one is the one without Spawn on the cover.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So do I count? So do we put it up to 8 because there's the variant covers on those?
No, I think to do that, because then, like, and I was joking before when I said $30,000, there's a Malibu Sun with a misprint. That's like, everybody's like, well, this is different too. And I'm like, get out of here. You're lucky this is the clean show. Get out of here.
Tell your story walking, pal.
Right. But I'm guaranteeing you Todd got back to you on X, right? Did he get back to you?
He did not.
Oh, sadly. He's on, maybe we should get, like, because the Rob does the whatnot. Doesn't, like, Todd have something called the drip?
I don't know. Does he?
No, yeah. Like, go to Todd's thing. And he's like, oh, it's called drip. Because, like, I found out that the kids have a thing called drip, and it's not what I thought it was. That's cool now. But he has some kind of thing where, because he was selling, like, a car that was, like, had Spawn painted on the side. Do you see anything that I'm talking about there?
No.
All right.
I see that he's on Whatnot. I don't see that, like, he has 2 different links for Whatnot. He has nothing for Drip.
Okay. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I'm not doubting you. Mm-hmm. I'm just telling you, when I look at his link tree, I don't see any reference to Drip.
I'm looking and I'm getting nervous now. I saw something. I know I saw something.
Well, while you look that up, this is a perfect opportunity for me to mention the soon-to-be-named network has moved. A decision made by me. You can go to Linktree /STBN network, and you can find all the links to all the shows in the soon-to-be-named network. And that, of course, would be Final Wrestling Place, Wings on Wings, Profane Arguments, Puzzle Warriors 3, Add-ons with Wrestling, We Need Wrestling, Viewer's Choice when that shows up, this show, of course, that you're listening to, Longbox Heroes After Dark, and as I see here, I'm missing a link to Porch Talk on there.
Oh, no. Get that back.
Yeah, I do need to fix that. So, yeah, it's you know, we're going through some restructuring.
And I will say, Joe, I try not to tweet during the show and stuff like that. But you do have a tweet coming in, so.
Uh-oh. Oh, look at this.
It's one of those things. I think it's like, what this, do you have for the Tinian thing?
This is his. Okay. Yes.
So this is that. I think if we subscribe and ask him there about Spawn, then he'll get back to us.
So
see, I was right. I feel good that at least I was right.
So I'll say this, Todd, when I clicked on Todd McFarlane's drip,
right?
There's no drops on his drip.
Oh, no.
And it's asking me to connect my wallet to it.
Oh.
So I'm not going to do that.
Gotcha. Oh, but he has a Discord.
Limited edition art, music, videos, comics, games, and more. Build the world's greatest collection while supporting creative pursuits. Drip_house, HAUS.com.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so Todd does have drip, but he doesn't have anything on his drops.
Right. Drip drops are the worst. So
yes. Drip drop, you don't stop. So soon to be named network.com does not exist. Like I said, Linktree at STBN Network as we're going through the restructuring currently.
Right.
But some other folks, other friends of ours that haven't gone through some restructuring would be our friend Mike Sterling over at ProgressiveRuin.com, our friend Kevin over at HellionsTeam.com, our friend Rick over at FreeKarateChops.StoreEnvy.com, our friend Jason and his self-published book, Jupiter, over at his Indiegogo, our friend Chris and his self-published book, Battle Monsters, over at FortressOfComicNews.com, our good friend Davey of the band Cave People, and his site, CaveDomainComics.com. Did I see he recently said he sent you a package?
Yes. He asked me the other day, he's like, oh, because I met him at Christmas, and he's like, the new book, because I have Keeper, I bought Keeper. He's yes. sending me the other one that he just got back in stock for me.
Cool.
I was going to ask for you, but I felt bad because he was sending me for free shipping, and I was like, all right, when you come in, I'll buy you a couple of drinks, you know?
I pay.
No, I didn't want it for free either, but he demanded. He said he was going to do it. If I didn't take it, he was going to get more tattoos, Joe.
Oh, my goodness. And no one wants to be known for their tattoos.
Exactly.
Right. But one thing that you do want to be known for is being a good comic book store. And I hear people say that they don't have a comic book store in their area. I even hear people say that the comic book store in their area isn't very good. Luckily, our comic book store, Comics on the Green, is very good. I have the Facebook page for them linked up here. Anytime the books arrive, anytime there's delays in the shipping, let's say a sitting president decides to drop in the area
right.
and hold up traffic, you can find out over on the Facebook page. You can find out final order cutoffs for pre-orders on some of the greatest and hottest books that are coming out in the future. And if you want to get some lightly worn, early modern age key issues, right. again, another package just dropped on Dave's doorstep.
Right.
We don't want them. You figure out what to do with these random copies of Amazing Spider-Man 300. Dave will always post the stuff up there, of course. And you can sign up for their mail order subscription service. Get your book sent to you weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly. And if you do, there's a chance you can get a sketch on the package from our good friend Becky, who we're going to turn things over to now for my walk down Lois Lane.
Welcome back to my walk down Lois Lane. So last week, Lois almost married Batman, but it was a trick concocted by the world's finest to teach Lois a lesson in snooping or being boy crazy or something. But what if they actually did marry? Today's episode is for all you Batman Lois Lane shippers, and shipping means to make a relationship out of two characters, for the people who don't know. Probably people like Todd. This is issue 89 from 1969, so let's dive in. Batman is in love with Lois and keeps a room full of things he wants to give her, but she's Superman's girlfriend and he's not breaking bro code. He attends a masquerade party dressed as Achilles and finds Lois dressed like Joan of Arc. That's fitting. She's waiting on Superman to dance with her, but as he arrives at the party with Wonder Woman, I know that's a ship-heavy fandom. Superman tells her he can't dance with her. He and Wendy have Justice League business. Saddened by him constantly breaking dates with her, Bruce offers to drive her home. Lois and Bruce begin to date and fall for each other, and he asks Superman's permission to marry her. Superman says whatever, but goes into his Lois Lane room and smashes stuff while crying that he's secretly in love with her and now he's blown it. We see a sad Superman standing in for Bruce's best man while Bruce and Lois get married. He confesses to her he's Batman, and she's delighted. He gives her a tour of the cave, and Robin is upset that he may be replaced as Batman's ward, but no worries, because we cut to the future, and Robin is training Bruce Wayne Jr. in his little bat onesie, and they become the Titanic trio. Lois helps her husband and son stop a crime-fighting ring who want to defeat the Justice League. These are low-level dudes way off of base, but after declaring Batman is the first one getting whacked, they target people who know him best. They kidnap Lois and ask her for Batman's identity because she writes about him, and she tells them it's Clark Kent, while Superman and Batman defeat them. The story ends with Superman telling Batman that Lois could still be a target, and this is why he never married her. Batman agrees and says he's made a mistake by having her as his wife. So this story is supposed to be a what if, and it's supposed to give readers a sense of, yeah, this is why they can't marry. But honestly, nobody knows Bruce Wayne is Batman. She's Bruce's wife. Who is connecting these dots? There are other Lois Marys what if stories, including one with Lex Luthor. That one's my favorite one because it is a trip. So tune in next week for some more Lois Lane.
Thank you very much, Becky. And again, I like the theme that we're doing here. One thing leads into another. It's almost as though she records like several at a time and banks them and sends them to me.
And strangely has a plan, something nobody on this show has ever had.
And she threw some shade at you there, Todd. Did you know what ship meant prior to her explaining it to you?
Listen, I did know what ship meant, and that really hurt my feelings, so I won't be throwing any shade back at her, because I'm not that type of person. But she was nice enough to explain what ship was. Like, I ship Jensen Ackles with Felicia Day. She'll understand that. But I just would also like to explain, like she did, that in comics, Marvel are what-if stories. And over at DC, it was imaginary stories, hoax stories, dream stories. And it even says at the end of the issue that this is an imaginary story and why Batman and Lois can't be married. That's just an explanation to people who don't know. Not probably like Becky, exactly like Becky.
Oh, my goodness.
No shade thrown down. None. Zero. Zilch.
But the one consistent thing that I like in these Lois Lane tales that we get is that so many people have a secret room dedicated to their crush where they have lots of pictures and other trinkets relating to that person in that room.
You're saying my stalking board is wrong? All right, I'll take it down.
All right. No, you're supposed to go and trash it when you find out the person that you're stalking has feelings for someone else. That's why the room is there.
Listen, if I did that every time, oh, you're killing me. But yeah, that is great. I do love it all. And I do like, you know, it's just like, this is why we can't be together and blah, blah, blah. And she did talk about shippers as we're come back around. Like the bit where she's talking like those Superman Wonder Woman shippers are a strong ship, Joe. Look out. It's all fun. I'm looking forward to more Lois getting married in the near future.
Yes, I'm sure this one will not be a hoax and will not be an imaginary tale.
Right, not a dream either.
So let's get into what we read from this past week. Todd, where would you like to begin?
I'm going to start with the book I was looking forward to most, Green Lantern number 10 by Jeremy Adams, art by Zermanico, with a second feature that I'll get to in a minute. But this is Hal going back to Oa to kind of figure out what's wrong because the spectrum of the colors with the rings have gone off. And he's like, he's investigating it because he was exiled on Earth, but he's managed to find a way off. And he goes and he's running into like various Green Lanterns. Some of the lesser ones for me, I know the younger generation will know them, like Joe and Simon Baz, I think is the name of them.
Yes.
Joe ends up saying, like, we're here, we can't use our rings because there's these group of the new United Federation of Planets people have these cops, and they have batons that could shut down our rings with it. So if we use our rings even once, they'll be able to find us, so we're covert. And through a series of events, she's explaining they're after something with the central power battery. They're trying to unlock it, and it's kind of creepy, and they're using like another Green Lantern, and they're gonna go save it. And like, I do like the bit where they're like, we can't use our rings because we'll be found. And I mark out whenever a hero's like, That's stupid talk. I'm gonna do something about it. And he does, because his ring is different. He's, you know, they, maybe they have a chance. And all in all, I really, like I said, I love this book. And now they maybe have somebody through a series of events they grab who can give us all the answers that we need. And, you know, anywhere this book goes, I'll follow. I'm a big Jeremy Adams fan. The art is beautiful. Hal looks perfect in the green and blacks. So good. Love this book.
Yeah, so you echo a lot of the sentiments. I love the world building that Jeremy Adams is doing in this. This is a book that very easily could have just been Hal is stuck on Earth with the disconnection to things.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that so quickly into the first year of the book, it's gone into this much larger storyline going on. I love the idea of the folks that are employed against the Rogue Lanterns can use and tap into multiple spectrums.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, which is a big deal, you know, obviously, whatever your opinion is of them, like the opinions of and the reasons why they added all the different colored rings outside of the green and the yellow, was it for marketing purposes? Sure. But if you could do something interesting with that stuff, you know, like mm-hmm. why not play within the rules and the groundwork that you've been given? And I think Jeremy Adams is doing a bang up job of such.
I 100% agree. Now, and then the second feature?
I was going to say, before you get into the discussion of the second feature, Todd.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was reading the second feature on my way down to Hershey Park this past week, and my wife is driving. I'm sitting in the passenger seat reading comic books, and I get to that second feature. And what I see with the crux, with the through line, what the thread of the second feature is... And I see that it's drawn by arguably Todd's favorite artist.
Could be.
Todd, I didn't want to text you. I wanted to call you on the phone.
Oh, if you call
while I was reading
wrong.
It and be like, Todd, I can't wait to hear you talk about the second feature in the Green Lantern this week. I hope you read it. I hope I'm not spoiling anything for you. So, Todd, let everyone know what the second feature of the Green Lantern book is about.
Okay, the second feature is called Guy's Bogus Lobo Adventure. And really, all that it's about is that the new Guardians, the new people in charge of the Green Lantern Corps, have sent out Guy. His one job now is to find Lobo and, you know, apprehend him. And Lobo is hiding, and this is where he goes to find him to hide. And now it's going to be just like when I talked to Jeremy Adams, it was Midnight Run. That's going to be, it's going to be him trying to get Lobo home because he's captured him with everybody trying to stop him. And nothing else goes on in the book at all, Joe.
So where is Lobo hiding out, Todd?
He is hiding out with a cosmic wrestling company. And to be fair, the character who appears is Omega Bam Man. And he appeared in Jeremy's run in Flash. I tweeted about, like, it was a while back, or maybe it was in the Discord, I can't remember, that they did a whole two issues where they came, the wrestling group came to Earth, and this character was brought there. So Jeremy's carrying it over from Flash to Green Lantern now.
And I love the design on Omega Bam Man with the Fu Manchu and the Kentucky waterfall mullet.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how there's the guy that kind of sort of looks like Savage Dragon with the serial numbers filed off. I love that Lobo's costume to hide out amongst the wrestling league is essentially just a luchador mask of his normal face print over himself.
Right, has the eye black kind of a deal.
And I also like that we get a little bit of Omega Bam Man's theme song in here, Todd.
Go ahead.
I am a real Galaxian, keeping it tight for every fan, and that's all we get of it. So if and when the day comes and we have a conversation with Jeremy Adams, it'll be 5% comics, 5% your history, 90% wrestling.
Oh, I know it's coming. And now, let's just say, maybe you drag your feet a little bit when it comes to going to cons. But yes. If Jeremy Adams is at any local con, you're going to be asking me to go just to, one, talk to him about wrestling, two, to rub it in my face. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong.
Though, when I do meet him, I do want to ask, because I get very confused on Lobo. We've had this Mandela effect thing where he says, he's like, I'm after Lobo, and I can't wait to put White and Harry in cuffs. He's not white, right? Isn't he blue?
I think we've talked about this before, sadly, and I say most recently, with the passing of Salty Keith back in October.
Right.
That was a big bone of contention, that his intentions were that he was supposed to be blue-skinned. And as he was kind of co-opted and moved, and even as we do like previewing the past stuff, in the solicitations of books that are not done by Keith, they refer to Lobo having chalky skin or white skin or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely think it's just one of those things that Keith gave up on. He's just like, fine, whatever, it's white skin now.
Right, but also in this issue, it looks like he has blue skin. Do you know what I mean? Other than the mask, I don't know. It's just very confusing.
Do you think that was an artistic choice by Kevin Maguire, since he was so closely aligned with Keith?
Mm-hmm.
That adds a homage or tribute or whatever to Keith to acknowledge his original thoughts or process for Lobo. We're going to give him the blue hue to his skin.
We could, but wouldn't that go to Rosemary Cheatham, who's the colorist?
The instructions to do so.
That is true. There are sometimes instructions by editor, writer, and or artist in the margins. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's going to be my first question, not about Omega Bam Man, you know?
No.
But I am going to see about getting you his first appearance in Flash, so you can get it graded. So
you
can
thank
get it GX'd, you know? So.
So the other book that we both read from this past week was Action Comics 1064, the official kickoff to the House of Brainiac crossover. Mm-hmm. And we talked before, this is written by Joshua Williamson with art by Rafa Sandoval. This is the kind of crossover that I could sink my teeth into. Crosses over into two books I'm already getting. It does have a one-shot bookend. I could deal with that. It lightly crosses over into the issue of Green Lantern that we just read, and it lightly crosses over into the issue of Power Girl coming up next month that I'm okay with.
Right. Now, hopefully they'll do a recap for us.
Right. Or, you know, whatever happens in it happens in it. But the crux of this, even though it's issue 1064, they do a really good job of setting everything up around the initial premise of that it's Lois's day off, because she is currently the editor-in-chief of the Daily Bugle, establishing Lois's character, and then as she is going on a morning run, unencumbered by the pressures of her job, she's running into all of the other people in Metropolis. Great device to introduce to you all of these characters that are going to be important in this story. I thought that was a very clever way to get things up. A great first, like a great jumping on point. Like, just in case you, for some reason you decided this is the first time that you've ever read any Superman stuff, or you haven't read any Superman stuff since 1992, and you're going to jump onto this. You're filled in, you know the names of the people, and you get very brief glimpse interactions with Lois, and therefore by proxy Superman.
Right. I would call it rapid introductions.
There you go. Like it. But never mind that, because there is an invasion in Metropolis of Brainiac drones and Zarnians? Is that how you would pronounce the race of people that Lobo is?
I think I always call them Caesarians, like the birth, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Now, I would always say, because it's very much close to Czar, which is spelled Czar. But anyway, a bunch of Lobos that aren't Lobos. How about that?
Right. His people, if you will.
Yes. So they all descend down on Metropolis. So, you know, you have your non-superpowered Superman family people doing their best to save innocence and head for cover themselves, and then all of the superpowered Superman people are in Metropolis on this day, as they would be. So of course we get the battles and so forth, and we find out that Brainiac's plan here is to acquire the smartest person on Earth for whatever his plan is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the crux of it. Very simple, very straightforward. It's an invasion happening in Metropolis and involves the entire Superman family, but it doesn't cross over into all of the Superman family books. Perfect. Right. Sign me up. I loved it. It was light. It was fun. It was an action jam-packed story. I really dug it.
I'm with you. Here's my take, and I 100% agree with you on everything. I will say early on, Lois meeting the rapid introductions, mm-hmm. Because I knew some of the characters and some I didn't. As it went on, I kind of felt overwhelmed with the new ones, but the book is written so well as it goes on that they all show up to fight the space army and everything like that. So it works. You need all hands on deck. So for like a hot second, I was like, I don't know. But then I definitely really did love it. There's a reveal during the book where Lex realizes something is amiss with something.
Yes.
And I love that because I got goosebumps right now thinking about it because I did not see that coming. And when the moment's dropped, you're like, that's fantastic. You've been laying the groundwork. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
really, really good. But the thing that I love the most about this book, and like I'll give the artist Sandoval credit, and you know maybe Joshua Williamson tells him like a little bit what to do. But the bit where he's flying, and it's like nothing's happened yet, and he's just flying with the birds, looking content. He doesn't have that big goofy grin that some people want him to have, but he ends up like, I'm with birds, I'm with the dolphins. And then there's a little bit where he flies under a cresting wave and he puts his hand through the water, like, you know, like a surfer would. This is Superman. Do you know what I mean? Like for a moment, he's not, you know, pummeling people. He's not trying to save the world. He's just happy. And this is something that, like, you know, you don't see Batman do this. You don't see the Flash do this, but this is something I would see Superman do. And I absolutely love it. And Joshua Williamson definitely has, like, every time he has what I want from Superman and he gives it to me. So
I agree wholeheartedly with everything that you said there. Yes.
Yep.
So yeah, like I said, if you're new to Superman, you want to get back into Superman, whatever it is, you know, I think this is a great place to start. We've said like the last couple like things, but Joshua Williamson's doing a great job on Superman. I hope he stays on the book for a long, long time.
I'm hoping he stays around for a bit too.
Yep. So that's what we read from this past week. Let's get to what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com every Tuesday around noon Eastern time, we put up the pull post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them sent to your home. Be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out this week. Todd and I attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. Todd is currently in the lead over me with one correct guess.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I'm looking over your list, Joe.
You have a few more books this week than you did last time.
Yeah, I have a few. But I'm looking over your list. Is the book you're looking forward to most Nightwing 113, a.k.a. 300?
It is Nightwing 113, a.k.a. 300. And I think that's also the book that you're most looking forward to coming out this week as well.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So this is the big. Go ahead.
I was going to let me ask you, because you keep detailed spreadsheets. Is Batman Offworld late, or is it just because it's monthly that I'm confused?
It's late.
Okay, just checking. Just I feel like it's been a while since we had a Batman Offworld.
I'm gonna look while you're talking. Right. So
tell
everyone why Nightwing 113 /300 is a big deal.
Well, first of all, it's a 300. It's a legacy issue, so you gotta buy it. But it's also the beginning, or rumored the beginning of the end of Tom Taylor's run on Nightwing, and I believe it does bring back Bruno Redondo to do this storyline completely, hopefully. So, like, that's firing on all, you know, things. So I'm going to lovingly keep my picture of Tom Taylor and not do anything to it.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of that circulating around.
Yeah, didn't want to talk about it, but I thought I'd just, you know, just poke a little.
No, yeah. I'm trying to look to see when the last issue of Offworld was.
Right. And then that's not a new picture for the pool post, or is it?
It's not. Oh, I hate to say this on the show.
It rained, didn't it?
No, it didn't. Yeah, let's say it rained. How about I lie and say it rained? How about that?
Okay, I'll ask you off mic why it didn't rain.
Let's just say the front window ain't as decorated these days as it used to be, you know?
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what? Just bring Max out in front of the sign and take a picture. And
yeah? We'll
with it. Yeah. Like, you know how today they had the free comic book day post Becky had with Max? Just take one of our postcards and have him put it down in front of him and take a picture of it.
Maybe
and
that's
a lot, and a Comics on the Green pit thing, and it'll be good to go.
We'll so the last that. Issue. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
But we're going to co-opt the love of Max, but go ahead.
The last issue of Offworld came out on January 31st.
Ah, and we're in April, so that makes right. sense that it's late.
So it's 2.5 months late, you know? It's late.
All right.
It is what it is. It happens. Books are late. So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, of course, be sure to check out past episodes of this show, past episodes of Longbox Heroes After Dark, and of course, check out our current ongoing Todd and Joe Have Issues as we are reading all of Gail Simone's Secret Six and all the detours therein. And our current detour is through a Gail Simone Nicola Scott book, Birds of Prey, specifically issue 106. Where we last left our crew. They were about to have a big to-do. And again, I kept saying Russia, but it was actually Azerbaijan, which again is no longer part of Russia, but it is definitely one of those Eastern Bloc countries that, you know, many of us dumb Americans just all lump together as right. Russia.
The Iron Curtain kind of a deal. Yes. I just want to say that you know how you loved last month's cover?
Yes.
I love this prize fight take cover.
Yes.
Of Big Barda and Knockout.
Yes.
Two healthy drawn women that look gorgeous by Nicola Scott. Just mm-hmm. amazing. And it takes me back to like prize fight posters, which I absolutely love. But just wanted to get that out.
But this issue is the big battle between the Secret Six and the Birds of Prey. And again, it's difficult. There's a ton of good bits in this. The dialogue is great, specifically the dialogue from Big Barda and Knockout, of course, adorning the cover. It's always interesting to see which members of which get paired up with which in the midst of this fight, of course. But I think the real crux of this issue involves Oracle, you know, obviously from a distance, kind of talking about how the Birds of Prey, the characters in the comic, the idea and the concept of it has kind of gotten away from her.
Right. It's being co-opted by Spy Smasher.
Well, not only is it being co-opted by Spy Smasher, that it's gotten to be like too big. Mm-hmm. Like she kind of laments and says, like, I remember when it was just like a couple of us. Right. And now it's like all of these people. And I definitely feel as though that may be some meta commentary by Gail herself. And again, I'm projecting, but again, that's what we're doing. That's my interpretation of this, that she had been on this book for some time. And, you know, whether it be editorial mandates or like, I want to write this character. I want to do this with this character. Well, now I don't know how to get rid of them, or this person was given to me. And now it's a much larger book than she was initially planned to do, and it's kind of gotten away from her as well.
How about a counterpoint from me on that?
Okay.
I would say that could be it, but I also think she was trying to make the Secret Six a thing happen. And to do that, like, you can't have Black Canary and Huntress and Oracle from afar fight the six members. So she had to beef up the team for the big Dookaroo, and then she could strip it down afterwards, if that makes any sense. So yeah. it could have been, you know, forced upon her, or this could have been all part of her master plan to write Birds of Prey and build it to something that could take on, you know, because you're how quick would Knockout take out? You know what I mean? Like, it's like she's even saying, Bart is like, oh, there's only six of them. You know, I could take that. It's the same way the other way. If Knockout was like, oh, there's only three of them, I can do this. So I don't know. I mean, that's something we'd have to ask her and see if, you know, there was anything, you know?
Yeah. And I say it every week that we talk about it, every time that she comes up. I so much love and I so much miss Kate Spencer Manhunter.
Mm-hmm.
Gail does a great job in this with her. Obviously, she gets some good bits with Ragdoll, who in and of himself is a great foil, a great character to kind of play off of. There's a very, and again, I don't want to say a graphic scene, but a very electric scene, if you will, where Manhunter wields her staff right in between Ragdoll's legs and says, how come that didn't, like, un-guy you?
Mm-hmm.
And Ragdoll just says, long story, smashing good aim, however. And there's, like, the little, like, you know, impact point in his midsection there, you know?
Yep, but they've established why that don't work in a secret in the Villains United, so...
And as good as everyone is drawn in this, and, you know, obviously the big two, I would say, would have to be Barda and Knockout as the most impressive of everyone drawn in this. I would say a close second would be the twists and turns that Nicola Scott is able to draw Ragdoll in.
Yes.
There's a bunch of different close-ups of Ragdoll where you get to see the grotesqueness of what his skin looks like underneath the costume, just peeking out just enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought some of those were great. And of course, the big reveal at the end where Ice finally wakes up after being, you know, smacked by Creote, who is like their muscle, I guess, while they were in Azerbaijan. And, you know, this whole thing was to awaken Ice from the death that she had had, and she is awake and she is angry. And a lot of what we've been seeing in this Secret Six run, Birds of Prey run, the Gail Simone written stuff, is Gail either taking characters that were considered no good or fire, jokes or afterthoughts or whatever, and really beefing up their power level or making them feel like serious threats. And as much as people love Ice, you know, every once in a while you would see a glimpse of what she could really do. Mm-hmm. But a character like her, who's kind of established, and I hate to say it, like, she was kind of established as, like, almost like a mousy character, like,
Yes. Second.
Yeah. And you get that last page where she wakes up and she has that big giant ice construct, and even just the way that her dialogue balloons are presented. Yep. She means business.
Right. I'll save that for one second. I'm with you on everything with the contorting poses of Nicola Scott on Ragdoll and Gail having the perfect team to fight the perfect team. Like, Misfit versus Harley Quinn, absolutely hysterical, because it's just a slap fight compared to Spymaster and Deadshot trying to shoot each other in the face. Like, the dichotomy of everything that's going on there, absolutely love it. But, Joe, I always say, like, every once in a while, you have to do Superman mad. Like 1 out of 100 times, Superman gets to be angry, and it's disconcerting. Do you know the only person that's slightly more disconcerting, or way more disconcerting, when they're angry, for me, was Ice. So she wakes up, and she's just like, which one of you guys murdered me so I could smack the ever-loving? And I'm like, oh, and I remember reading this for this time, like, Ice just got real, you know what I mean? And I think they're going to shave the ice a little bit, so it's not as edgy, but
oh boy,
it's still, you know, it's still a moment where I got a little bit scared, Joe.
But all in all, a great issue.
Yep.
Perfect cliffhanger for what's going to be the end of it. Now for next week, as we discussed, next week is issue 107. But also the first two pages of 108.
Right.
And that's just to kind of wrap things up. You know, obviously, 108 ends up being the wrap up to the story. It's Gail's last issue of Birds of Prey.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of those first two pages, there's no other Secret Six stuff in the issue.
Yes.
You know, it's mainly a Birds of Prey issue, of course. To set everything up for, you know, Tony Bedard coming on to the book, setting up the new team and the new status quo and everything else like that. But we do need that little bit of a wrap up there for the first two pages for our Secret Six to lead us into our next thing. So again, like I said, next week, issue 107 and the first two pages of 108. Mm-hmm. And let me look at my notes. I think that's everything except for the plugs, right?
Right. And then maybe you tease something, you watch something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's get into all of that here. I didn't include that in the notes because, okay.
Right.
So, of course, you could support us by making any and all of your purchases through our eBay affiliate link. I'm not going to read the script. It's been over a year. I should know it by now. But there's affiliate links all throughout the page over at longboxheroes.com. You can use those affiliate links, buy stuff off eBay, and it helps us out. Gives us a little bit of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. TeePublic sales next week, so I'll give that the hard push then. Hard push every week, of course, is going to be the Patreon. Patreon.com/longboxheroes. For as little as $1 a month, you are going to get two bonus shows from Todd and myself. One, of course, is Previewing the Past, where we look at 30 years ago, this month's previews catalog. I think everyone should have by the end of the week, April 1994, because this weekend we will be recording for Comic Book Oddities, Superman 3, the Richard Pryor, Christopher Reeve vehicle. And I think Todd is going to make a pitch on this week's episode in regards to adding something else to the wheel, or maybe multiple something else's to the wheel.
Yes, yes. We'll have to discuss it. You know, join us, won't you?
Yes. $5 a month is going to get you those two bonus shows 2 weeks before everyone else. It's also going to get you After Dark 2 days before everyone else, so you can listen to the shows in the correct listening order. Any plan, any way that you sign up for the Patreon, you're also going to get the full scans of the previews catalogs that we talk about on Previewing the Past, going all the way back to 1990. So even if you don't get a chance to listen to Previewing the Past, and sometimes those are hefty episodes, 3+ hours at length, we try to keep them as evergreen as possible. But, you know, look at the covers. Look to see when you started reading comic books. And stuff is going to jump out at you and thumb through those things, and it's going to bring back so many memories and, you know, so on and so forth. But definitely check us out, support us, sign up for the Patreon, get bonus content from Todd and I, of course. And I watched X-Men 97. Have you been watching X-Men 97?
No. I did say when everybody was kind of praising stuff about it that I went back on my Disney Plus and tried to watch the original X-Men 97.
Yes.
Like and be like, okay, I got nothing on my plate right now. I'm going to watch that and get caught up, and I'll go right into the new X-Men. And I got about 3 episodes in, and I was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go straight into X-Men 97 because this isn't doing it for me. But maybe your pitch will get me to watch the new one.
I will applaud the internet as a whole for doing a very good job of not spoiling things.
Oh, okay.
Everyone talks about the episodes when they come up, but they talk about it in these vague sort of ways that it doesn't really spoil anything.
I don't like it. Spoil it. No, I'm kidding.
I was a little concerned initially when I saw some of the way that the animation looked. Mm-hmm. But looking at it like on your phone or on a computer screen out of context is a lot different than watching it in full view on your TV in the context of the show. I think it's animated well for its time, you know, for what it's supposed to be. There's a Mojo episode where Mojo gives Jubilee not a Sega Genesis. And it's very clearly a Sega Genesis. There's tons, like the video game episode is a lot of fun, which was episode 4. If you're a video game person, especially if you played the X-Men video games, there's a lot of fun stuff in there. They don't really hammer you too hard with like the Easter eggs and everything else. Spoilers. A little bit until they show up on Genosha.
Oh, Genosha shows up. Okay.
But of course, you're going to see a lot of like mutant Easter eggs once you show up on the place where all the mutants are.
Mm-hmm.
They do play fast and loose, of course, with like actual X-Men continuity. Of course. But that's okay. There was one or two things that I was like, this didn't really happen this way, but I get why you're doing it this way.
Right. Well, wasn't there a whole thing like in the original cartoon back in the 90s where they just supplanted Jean Grey for a Dark Morph story? Like, yeah. It was Dark Phoenix, but it was Morph and stuff like that. So, you know, it was always a little bit off.
It was always a little, but that's the thing. I'm so far removed from watching the original cartoon. Mm-hmm. A lot of that jumbles in with actual X continuity.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of newer stuff. It's, you know, taking existing bits of X continuity from the comic books and appropriating it for the cartoon. And it seems as though everyone likes it. My wife really liked it. Literally watched whatever the most recent episode was. Literally 10 minutes before we started recording tonight. And when I told my wife, I'm like, well, we could watch the next episode, I think, tomorrow, because I think that's when the next one comes out. She goes, oh, I thought this was, she's like, one of those things, like, oh, I thought this was completely done. I'm like, no, we just had some time. I figured we'd watch it over the last, like, 2 days. And we both enjoyed it. I give it a recommendation. I hear it's doing well. It's getting good views, good numbers. It's a little bit more, and I don't want to say adult, but it's a little bit more deeper, a little bit more heady than what the Saturday morning cartoon was, because while this version is selling toys, they're selling toys to people that watched this cartoon 30 years ago, so it's people that are a little bit older.
Right, our age, who have the money, Joe.
Yeah, yeah.
Or younger, a little younger, too.
But it's definitely worth a watch. It definitely doesn't hold your hand for a lot of stuff, but it's not as dense as what a normal X-Men comic would be, you know? I think someone with my cursory knowledge of X-Men was able to keep up. And a couple, two, three things I had to just point out to my wife, and I'm like, oh, this is okay, because this happens. And she's like, oh, I don't know what that means. And I'm like, I saw the teaser at the end of this in the credits. I go, it'll make sense, like, next episode, you know?
Right, right.
I'm tiptoeing around stuff. I don't want to spoil it. Go in as clean as possible. Don't worry about the old version. Just dive right into this one.
Right. Speaking of X-Men, because you brought it up, in the June order form, which I'm doing now, I'm just finishing up, you know, Marvel has the X-Men 35, which is the big wrap-up to the Genosha, or no, the whatever island thing that they're doing.
Before they roll out all the new ones in July and August, okay.
Right. But I guess it's an oversized, maybe a $5.99 or a $6.99. I don't know. I don't have my previews in front of me. But it's going to have like the books that roll out of it. And I'm like, do I need to get this for the Gail Simone story? Am I paying $6.99, $5.99 for the Gail Simone? Probably like 4 to 8 page story. You know what I mean?
So I will say no, only because I got bit by the Spider-Man one that came out a couple weeks ago, where it was Web of Spider-Man 1. And it was like, this is the thing that's going to launch all of the Spider titles for where they're going to be going toward the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And in this $6, $7, 64 page, whatever, I think 4 pages of it tied into Amazing Spider-Man, the only Spider-Man book that I'm reading. I think this was a poor planning thing, because a lot of it dealt with Madame Web.
Uh-oh.
I think they might have been banking on the movie being a little bit bigger of a success than we were, you know?
Right.
So again, I spent $7 on a book that like literally was like 4 pages mean anything to me.
Right.
I assume it's going to be wrapping up a lot of the stuff. And, you know, there's, what, 3 new creative teams, so you're going to get a couple pages of stuff. I think you're good just skipping it and getting Gail's number one, Uncanny X-Men number one, and just using that.
You know what? I just looked it up. Okay, so it's an X-Men 35, but it's also an X-Men 700.
Yeah.
And it is $9.99. I'm not buying that.
I think you're good without it, Todd.
Yep. I mean, I may find a way to read those 4 pages, but Yeah, I'm not pulling the trigger on that.
All right. Well, I'm pulling the trigger on the show this week. I think we've done enough show.
Right.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. This was episode 706 of Long Box Heroes. For Todd, this is Joe saying thank you very much for listening, and we will see you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
You're listening to the soon-to-be-named network, the Lamborghini of podcast networks.
The Rob is a Long Box Hero. He gives us five stars.